Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by the Aero Cart from Works. Today, we're going to have Josh Wiggler here in the studio for the Wiggle Room. And I don't have to ask Josh to help me lug any heavy objects around my house because I've got an Aero Cart by Works. It's an 8-in-1 all-purpose carrier, so heavy loads are easy to lift and haul. It's like having a wheelbarrow, a trailer mover, and a dolly all in one because you can transform the Aero Cart to whatever you need it to do. With two oversized wheels, even the most awkward of loads can stay balanced so you never strain your back. And believe me, it's easy for me to strain my back because with the patented Turbo Lift technology, it'll make 200 pounds feel like you're moving just 17 pounds around. You could also go to works.com, that's W-O-R-X.com, and see clips of the Aero Cart in motion where you can see all the different things that the Aero Cart can do. You could move around heavy bags of topsoil, gravel, even refrigerators without any help at all. So now this know-it-all can move it all, lift it all, and haul it all with the Works Aero Cart. Go to aerocart.com, enter promo code RHAP at checkout to receive free shipping. That's aerocart, AEROCART.com, and receive free shipping at checkout. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with a very special edition of week 8 of The Wiggle Room.
Check it out.
Josh.
I'm watching it. Yeah. Josh Wiggler here in the studio.
Yeah, in the studio, in the Robble Room.
Yes, I guess so.
Robble.
Yeah. I'm in on the double.
My room in your room. That's weird. I don't know how we fit it in here, but we did it.
Yes, that's right. All right. Well, here we are.
Peekaboo.
Yeah, peekaboo. So, yeah, I see you. You're so close. I can give you a fist bump. It's happening. We just did it.
We did it. And we are now talking here live in the Wiggle Room. Well, it's recorded, but we're here in person doing this. Josh, what brings you to Los Angeles?
I am in town because it had just been too long since I had seen you, Rob.
Oh!
And I missed you, and I wanted to hang out.
Yes.
I was feeling lonely. Worth the trip.
Okay.
That's exactly why I'm here.
All right. Well, I really do appreciate that. Thank you very much.
So, like once every couple of months, I just have to get out here and see my friend Rob.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Good to see you too.
Yeah.
And very excited to do the Wiggle Room here in person this week after another exciting week.
Yes. A really good week of Survivor. Co wrong. The little season that could go right.
Yeah.
It could go pretty right.
You know, week after week, we just keep waiting for this magic carpet ride to end.
Has not yet. And, you know, based on where things were left off this week, doesn't look like it's going to end anytime soon.
Yeah. So
did I just jinx it? Is that it?
Like, but we say that every week.
We say it every week and nothing's been jinxed.
Yeah. So the season has been really, really strong and very, very fun. So we'll see where we go from here.
Yeah, we'll see where we go from here. Sad to see RHAP's very own Nick Majorano leave and become the Majorano of Ponderosa.
Yes, he's the Majorano of Ponderosa.
Yeah, very sad.
So sad
he
to
is
see him
the
go.
Mayor of Ponderosa, though. Like, no disrespect to Neil Gottlieb, who is the foreperson of the jury. He is the first juror.
Mm-hmm.
But Nick claimed Ponderosa. I believe you said it was like Chris Columbus rules.
Yes, he planted his flag. Yeah. He said, I got here first, yeah. And I am the mayor of Ponderosa. What title would you give yourself if you got to Ponderosa first?
Oh, man. If I got to Ponderosa first, I mean, I think that Cass called herself the queen of Ponderosa. Also, she was the mayor of Ponderosa, I believe. She was the queen and the mayor of Ponderosa. So I think that just automatically you are the mayor of Ponderosa if you're the first arrival. But then you can come up with an ancillary title is what you're saying?
Well, I think you can name yourself anything you want. Would you not give yourself some sort of a
Lord
title?
Lord Commander?
Yes, or like the call of Ponderosa.
Call Ponderosa? Yeah, you have to have an O at the end.
Call, I believe that was the guy who got kicked off Australia second, right?
That's yeah.
What Mad Dog said?
Yeah, it was call. Call for smuggling the beef jerky in.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a real jerky move.
Real, so I hear.
Real bad call.
So I hear.
Bad call
so
from
I
call.
Hear. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, Josh, very fun episode. And, of course, you got to speak with Nick. I did your exit interview every week for Parade.com.
I did. Yeah.
Any interesting takeaways from Nick?
I thought it was one of the best exit interviews that I did this year. And no disrespect to any of the other players from Korang. I thought that Nick just came in hot, you know, because, man, that's just...
He didn't come in cute?
Woo, no. Firmly hot. Firmly hot. Nick came in hot. Had a lot of hot takes from this hot man, Nick, who he had some interesting takes on, you know, everything from like the Ty Trang vote for why Ty voted for Jason. I'm sure you've covered this on the podcast already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it was this, you know, sort of super backup plan of, you know, maybe let's switch the vote over from Nick to voting for Jason. And let's not actually do that because Joe's not going to know. Ty thinks that they're going with the Jason plan, votes for Jason. I thought that that was very revealing. We talked a little bit about RHAP. That was fun to kind of trade notes a little
bit. To reminisce from when you guys were both, yeah, you know, but bloggers on, yeah, RHAP.
When we shared a byline.
Yeah.
Back in the day. Oh, those were the times. Those, yeah, are the times.
But it just goes to show you, like, you know, there's so many people that we encounter in, like, the, you know, this world of, like, what we talk about with Survivor. And the crazy thing about it is, like, a year from now, these could be the people we're talking about on the show.
Right. Yeah. It's true. There's people in the network who, like, we could be talking about. You are Philly. You're getting out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Get our Philly on Survivor.
And it could be anybody, from the person in the comments that's calling us idiots, uh-huh, or the person who's
fart parties,
yeah,
of the world.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Sure. Sure. People tweeting to us. Yeah. To, you know, anybody. And so it just goes to show you, it's like, you know, I guess everybody is a potential contestant on the show.
You just never know. You never know where they're going to come from. So that's really great. It was fun talking RHAP with him. I asked him if he has the itch to blog again.
No, right?
He said that he, you know, he doesn't want to, like, reveal too many secrets about the show. You know, he was worried about that. He said, like, oh, I would do it if, like, I could do it in sort of, you know, like a goofy, entertaining way.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see Nick back on RHAP. Like, Nick could be your fish back. Like, he could be the guy who's handing out, what would be his equivalent of the fishies?
Oh.
Like nickels?
The nickels?
Yeah, it's like he gives 5 cents, his 5 cents to, you know, everybody who did well.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like to get him back would be really, really great. What else did we talk about? Oh, we talked about his injuries, which he talked to you about, right?
No, I don't think he talked about his injuries.
Yeah, we talked about his injuries. I mean, everybody out there is getting beaten up. Wasn't really shown much for Nick because there were more pressing stories, but he suffered from ill back.
Ill back?
Yeah, he had a really bad case of ill back. Here, I pulled the clip from our interview. Let me play it for you right now.
Used to blog a lot at our app, but never figured out the art of tweeting. Started on a tripartite train and ended covered in a storm called Sydney. And this is how you blindside me. This is how you blindside me out of the freaking game. Take me to tribal council and just write down my name. It's not like me to say sorry. I'm the author of my own story. Michelle, you're mistaken. Don't worry, bro, I'll just mansplain it. Yeah, I'm Korang. The beatdowns were bad enough to make you envy Joe Dowdle. My wound was a swollen head, so big I got blindsided. Nick, 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 oh no. Nick, 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 oh no.
Yeah, so poor Nick. Ill back really sucks. Yeah, man, Nick. Ill back is really bad, and yeah, that's what he, you know, came down with. So
yeah,
it's very, it was very difficult when very, poor Nick. Ill back
very
was just
tough for Nick.
Tough,
ill back
tough
is no
thing
joke
to go through.
Yeah.
So that was my interview with Nick. It was really good. It was fun to bro down with Nick Majorana, who didn't mansplain things for me too much.
Yeah.
So if he was acting a little arrogant or crotchety out there, blame it on the ill back.
Okay.
Real bad case of ill back.
It's no joke.
No.
It's no
it's
joke.
It's kind of a joke.
All right. So.
Yeah. So that happened.
Yeah. That just happened.
It did happen.
It just happened.
It happened. It did happen.
All right. So, Josh, of course, every week at the Wiggle Room, we talk about the story of Survivor Korang, yeah, and sort of try to take a look at what's going on. Put the pieces, yeah, together. And so in terms of the end of Nick's story, do you have sort of like a, could you concisely describe what you feel like his story was?
Well, he had the douchebag arc. You know, he really did. And Nick knows I love him. I don't mean anything mean by it, but that's how he was on the show. He was a villain. You know, he was, you know, this, he was the arrogant guy who went out there, who mansplained to Michelle how to play the game and always thought that he was on the right path. He, you know, has this moment with Aubrey in this past episode where even he is saying, like, I know I'm being arrogant, you know, and he owned it, you know. And I think that one of the things that's great about Nick, at least in the exits, and I buy it, is that, you know, he's not like, you know, licking his wounds over the way he was depicted on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a guy who knows that he was playing a part in this story on the show. And he was somebody who was, you know, looked at as the guy with the slicked back hair who's going to have some major comeuppance coming his way. And it's going to be extremely satisfying. It's his first and only tribal council that he goes to. He's this person who comes in the season who should have a wealth of knowledge based on the fact that he had blogged about the show. He'd studied it closely. And he goes to one tribal council and he gets slam dunked. I think it's fun. I think that's a really fun arc for Nick. It's different from what we were thinking about Nick possibly doing based on last week when we were talking that Nick really showed up as the narrator of that merge episode. And it felt like maybe it was the beginning of the rise of Nick.
Rise of Nick.
Instead, no.
It was a quick rise and fall.
Quick rise, quick fall. Really fun to watch. And, you know, I think that his fall really facilitates now where we're at, where it does seem to be like this coalition of Sydney and the ladies versus the boys.
Yeah. So Sydney makes this move this week where she organizes this group of five women plus Joe.
Yeah.
Maybe Ty. And so what do you think is the story from here? Do you think, is this the beginning of Sydney bringing her group of women moving forward, a la a Kim Spradlin type character,
right,
where she's going to basically knock out the rest of these men? Does that become the story that we're about to see?
Right. I think that that's a possibility. You know, we've been very complimentary towards Sydney here in the Wiggle Room, at least. I think that it's been complimentary towards her on the podcast. I know that you've had some questions about the move that she made. Is it too early? All of that stuff.
Well, what's your take on it, just to get that out of the way?
I think that, you know, where Survivor is now, you could make the argument certainly that that's an early move, but if you look at someone like Tony as a model and you look at the LJ.
Tony was a model,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, if you Google Tony Vlachos model, you might be surprised. Tony, you know, Tony going after LJ, so much talk about that's so early to do that. And then this guy goes on to win. You know, I think that early moves, you know, early big moves like that are happening more and more on the show where people are turning, people are flipping a little bit faster. For Sydney, I do think she was in a pretty decent spot with Jason and Scott, where, you know, she was really solidly with those two guys who did not seem to have anything against her. She would have been able to ride that for a while. But if she wants to, A, you know, have a move on her resume, and B, if she really wants to work with Miss Debbie, you know, who seems to be her BFF out
there. Damn, Debbie.
Yeah, damn, Debbie. Like, if she really wants to hang out with Debbie, now would be the time to do so. And I think also when you look at the numbers on the board in terms of men versus women, and she really likes the women that are in the game, and if you want to have your options open in terms of there being more women in the game to work with than men, now was the right time to do that. So I'm of a few minds on it. I think I can see why it makes sense for her. It also, if you are more of a conservative player, if you, you know, are a little bit more conservative with strategy, it seems like a quick time to flip on Jason and Scott, who don't seem like they are the most beloved people out there, although that changed a little bit this week, too.
Well, what about Scott and Jason in terms of the fallout from this? So much was made out of the stuff with Alicia early on in the season.
Right.
Where do you think the story goes? Because it really did feel like, from a story perspective, that we were seeing a softening of Scott and Jason. Scott, for the last few weeks coming, Jason certainly much more evident this week, where he talks about his daughter. Scott talks about his mom who's sick and taking care of his family. Now, do you think that we're about to see those guys go into the night and then just a complete reversal of where they were seeming like they were showing a nicer side,
right,
in this past episode, and now they're going to flip that around following this? Or do you think that maybe we're being shown that side because maybe we're going to see the possibility that she goes back to them?
Right. Well, I mean, how much are we talking previews right now? Can we talk previews?
You could talk the previews. All right. I mean, if just, you know, give a little bit of a warning.
Here's a little warning.
Care about what to hear about the previews.
We're going to talk previews first.
But I feel like that the stuff in the previews should so be taken with a grain of salt.
Right. But it seems like maybe Jason and Scott took more than a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like by the previews, they took the whole shaker. They took the pots.
Right.
They're taking the pans. No Kyle Jason. We're going full Hance if next week is any indicator based on these previews. That can't be great. I think
Thug Dizzle.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that was interesting to me about the fact that we're learning about Jason's daughter who has autism and how all of his money goes to helping her and how she's perfect. That's just the way that she is. This is how it's supposed to be. How he's talking about, I wasn't going to come into this game and use that, but if anyone asked me about my kids, I would be straight up about it. This is the humanizing moment for Kyle Jason that I wanted to see four episodes ago. You know, I really wanted to see this side of him where he had a softer side, where, you know, the green teddy bear gets more of an explanation. We are getting this, what is it, eight episodes now, nine episodes? Eight. We're pretty deep into the season to be getting it. What I think it could be is the softening of an arc where it looks like Jason and Scott, if things were to continue the way that they started this week, where Sydney is with Debbie and Aubrey and Michelle and Julia and Joe and Ty, and Jason and Scott are on the outs, this might be making them look a little bit more sympathetic so that the inevitable boots of these guys isn't just like a straight up bully goes down type of thing. Or it could be the start of them finding their way back into whether it's Sydney's good graces or making something work with some of the other players in the game, and they manage to hang on and survive a little bit more, that you're rooting for them to do that. Because otherwise, if it were just like a straight up axing of these two people, that's pretty cut and dry, and I think you want to make it a little emotionally complicated.
Okay, so we'll see where that goes, and it's going to be very interesting to see what the fallout is from this, because you know, we've seen it both ways on Survivor. We've seen if somebody takes it well and sort of like rolls with the punches. We've seen where people do not take it well. History does not often side with people that do not take it well. But I mentioned when I blindsided Jenna and Heidi on the podcast earlier this week in the Amazon, and they did not take it well.
Mm-hmm.
And Jenna went on to win the game.
She did go on to win the game. So there are exceptions to the rule for sure. The other thing that caught my interest was like, yeah, we got that great moment from Jason.
It should have been like, don't check me, boo.
Don't check me, boo. We got this great moment from Jason where he's talking about his daughter, but we also got a moment where Michelle was really narrating how Jason thinks he's in control and it's unattractive. And I think that that leads to, you know, seeing why she's going to end up voting the way she does, why she's going to pivot away from the coalition that Jason has brought together. But I just thought that that was kind of an interesting note as well, that even in the episode where we are seeing that Jason is a three-dimensional guy, that he has a family back home, that he has daughters, that he has a daughter who has autism and has this really kind of compelling story. That's a really compelling story. In that same episode, we're also hearing from Michelle, like, man, this guy is grating, you know, really rubs people the wrong way. So it's complicated. It's complicated stuff with Kyle Jason.
We talked so much about Aubrey and what her story was going to be coming out of Neil going home. How do you think that she rebounded story-wise this week?
She's still a really prominent character on the show. You know, she's not the main narrator of this episode or anything like that, but she has, you know, a big part in it. There's this great moment where, you know, all the guys are talking, where Kyle and Nick and Scott, and they even have Michelle and Julia and Sydney there. It's, you know, the sixum that's going to be making these votes. I don't know if Ty was there. And they're talking about what they're going to do. Let's just stick to the plan. 3 days is nothing. We'll hold the way that we're going to hold. And Aubrey is in the distance and she starts approaching. And there's somebody saying, Aubrey's coming or Aubrey's coming back. And I've seen some people, I forget who, announce yourself on Twitter, but somebody on Twitter pointed out to that, being like, oh, that's a really like subtle, is Aubrey coming back? Is this underdog story beginning for Aubrey, where she is going to have some sort of coming
that's
up?
A bit much. That's a reach.
It's a bit of a stretch, but it is, you know, I think it plays out with how this episode goes, that Aubrey, who should have at the very least been in the offing to be going home tonight. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she is, you know, part of this plan to split the votes. She ends up very much staying. She ends up very much fighting to stay alive. And as of right now, seems to be in a really good spot moving forward.
This week, we also had Michelle and Julia vote with Sydney and the rest of the women to end up sending Nick home. And I think that this is an interesting storyline between these two women, who's in the better spot and where they're going to go. Josh, your winner pick was Michelle this season.
Yeah.
Who did you feel like got more credit in the story in terms of Michelle and Julia?
I think Michelle for sure. You know, I don't think that Julia got a ton of credit. I don't think that you see Julia talking about the decision to move against Nick.
You know, it was funny, though, with Nick, where Sydney is in the water talking with Michelle and Julia, And she's like, what do you guys think about Nick? And then Julia's like, oh my God, he's so annoying. Like, he's always like checking on us. It's like, yes, we're still with you. And she's like, you want to vote him out? Like, yes, let's do that.
Right.
Let's. So in fairness to Nick, like, maybe not the worst idea to keep checking in.
Yeah, you should have continued the check-ins.
With Michelle and Julia.
But maybe he should have done the check-ins in a more subtle way. You know, maybe he should have, you know, curbed the check-ins a little bit.
Yeah,
they were very noticeable and emotionally taxing for these two. I think that Michelle is the person who talks it through the most on camera. You know, she's the person who really is telling us how she feels about why and why not to go after Nick. Why is it a good idea to follow Sydney's plan and do this right now, especially when Nick, even if he's grating on them, even if Nick is somebody who's getting on their nerves, Nick is somebody who has had Michelle's back. She has had no reason not to believe that. Granted, they haven't been to tribal council yet. I think what was most interesting to me about the Michelle thing, I mean, I don't know how locked in this new alliance is. You know, who knows if this is going to hold? There's three brains, three beauties, three brawn left in the game right now. A lot of possible permutations. And the read I was kind of...
My thing was, I don't think it will.
Yeah, and my read on the situation based on the way that Michelle was talking that through was kind of like, we are getting, you know, sort of set up for Michelle to like be okay with it now, not be great with that move right now, but to recognize that people are taking swings right now. Mm-hmm. And now she's going to have to start thinking about what her swing is going to be.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of options in terms of what they want to do next. But I thought it was interesting that it was Julia that we saw in the episode talk about that. She has such a good relationship with Scott.
Yes, very interesting.
And I thought that it was an odd point to see that in the episode in terms of, it was right after Scott tells the story about his family. And she's like, you know, I really am very close with Scott. We saw that after she came back from the Braun Beach when she was exiled during that one vote, she came back and went right back in with Scott and with Ty. And now I don't think that connection is dead.
I don't think so either. And I think that that's on the show for a reason. You know, that's not just on the show to humanize Scott, or maybe it is. It could be. I think that it's on the show because you could see Julia and Michelle having incentive to turn things around again using Kyle and Scott potentially.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, well, if you say that potentially, if that door is open,
yeah.
And I know a lot of people say that they don't even want to think about that idea. You know, Sydney voted with the women. That's a new thing. And now the women will now just pick off the men.
Which would be fun. I would vote for that. I think that could be good.
It's fun. There is a very real possibility that that's what happens.
Those characters are all great. So I would be very happy with that.
But I've been saying that I feel like that there are many, many things that could happen, and a lot of them are not good for Sydney. And if potentially that Michelle and Julia end up returning back with Jason and Scott, that's four now out of nine. Is Ty somebody who, do you think, is he back with them in terms of where he's going in the game? Is he sticking with the guys? And he voted for Jason,
yeah,
but he got crossed up. So he was, like Aubrey, sort of like, ah, what do I do? He was sort of caught up, and he votes for the wrong person there. He thinks he's voting with the group at large.
Yeah.
He thinks he's voting with the numbers and the majority in voting out Jason that night. It turns out to be Nick. So while he did defect against Jason and Scott, he was also left hung out to dry by the majority.
Yeah, he was.
Which is a bad move on their part.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if Ty is a number with you, make sure he knows what to do so he doesn't end up being completely embarrassed at the vote.
But you can't, you know, yell at the majority too much for that if, you know, Ty
is
just...
Oh, my God!
He'll yell enough himself. You know, you can't get too mad about that if Ty himself is kind of just losing it.
Well, and also, just sort of with another grain of salt, you know, this comes to us from Nick's exit interviews, right. This explanation and the exit interviews, as Stephen will tell you, not always canon.
Ty himself seems to be refuting it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not really coming out and saying, at least as of our current recording on the Saturday before this posts,
mm-hmm.
I believe on Friday night he was tweeting with our own David Bloomberg. And saying a lot of, you know, like, oh, I don't know about that story.
Yeah,
I'm not
more
so sure.
On that in Why Nick Lost coming up on Tuesday.
So that'll be really interesting to listen to David's take and also to finally get from Ty in on the show. I assume that that fallout will play.
But I'm glad you brought up David because he's also been going back and forth with Neil about what Nick said in the exit interview. So maybe Nick didn't really have his finger on the pulse, or maybe other people didn't like what, you know, that Nick was really tapped in.
Right.
So we'll explore all that. But in terms of Ty,
yeah.
and where he is now, do you feel like his story is pointing that
he will end up flipping to the women, or do you think that he will end up sticking with his bros?
Yeah, Ty is so great. Ty is such a great character. I know that you talked with Chaos Cass if Ty has any sort of Keith Nail quality.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, not really. You know, she thinks that Joe is a little bit more Keith Nail-ish.
Yeah, but I felt like that in talking with Cass, I felt like that she had a very negative perception of Keith. That I felt like, right. I'm not sure if she's a reliable narrator on that, because it seemed to me like there was some undertones that maybe Cass doesn't love Keith, and maybe...
Or at least his association with like the Savage Bros.
Right, so I'm not sure if she's being completely objective there, because I do see some... things about Keith in Ty.
There are Keithisms there for sure.
Yes.
You know, it's not stick to the plan levels and the vote goes the way that the vote goes and nothing is blown up. But he just threw that super idol information out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems like a guy, you know, he's a guy who has his fair share of freakish challenge ability, as we see in this immunity challenge where he outlasts Sydney. Where he really does great in this immunity challenge, gets a standing ovation from Jeff Probst.
Yeah. I do think that there are some similarities there between the, you know, kind of can be a little loosey-goosey with the information, has this freakish ability in some of these immunity challenges, tends to get along a lot better with the bros.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the other thing that is, you know, very Keith Nail is Keith's attitude of kind of like 3 days at a time, one step at a time. You know, when I got to talk to Keith before the game of Second Chance, that's really how he said he plays this game. That's how he plays Survivor. Just like one step. I get through this phase. I get down from 18 to 17 to 16. And he just kind of looks at it that way. And a lot of that is loner style. A lot of that is on his own. You know, he's got people that he can bounce things off of, or at least he joins in with majorities and stuff. But he's not really locking in a partner or one specific coalition of people necessarily. I don't think that that's the Keith Nail play. I think Keith is a little bit of a plug and play type of person. I think we see that with Ty as well. But I do think that we see from Ty that he generates bromances.
Mm-hmm.
And he had one with Caleb very famously, and now recently has been developing one with Scott. And he broke away from Scott in this past episode because I think that he's, you know, a smart enough guy to see if like the rest of the people are together. And let's not forget that he is in Debbie's alliance. He did, you know, of course, say, like, I'm in. Debbie, or at least Debbie says that Ty is in. You know, I think,
yeah, he didn't love that.
But, you know, if that's, you know, if Debbie is going to include him in those conversations, I think, you know, he's going to roll along with that. But I think that Ty is somebody who has shown his love for Scott in the past. Scott and Jason are kind of a package deal. If Ty trusts Scott, and Scott really did see Ty through some tough spots at the post swab gondole, I think that you could really see why Ty would want to go back and play with that guy. Especially if he knows where the other half of the idol is, and it kind of behooves him to keep that super idol together.
Do you feel like the prospects for the super idol are done at this point?
I don't know if it's done. I think it could be forced to be played, or I don't know.
I think it could potentially loom large idols this week, because this is the final nine, which traditionally final nine after the merge, and also in these seasons where we have 9-10 people at the first tribal council, they can always be a little bit crazy. You have potentially, if it does turn out to be an alliance of just the bros, if Ty ends up remaining in an alliance with Jason and Scott, that's a three. There's two idols in that group of three. Would everybody else be tight enough together to be able to split the vote 3-3?
Right.
You could put, you know, idols on the wrong two people. So I think that this could be potentially a really exciting tribal council this week for the Live Know-It-Alls number 101.
Yeah, 101 live in New York. Can't wait. I feel like just hearing you say that, this could be a great week to vote out. And I hate to say it.
Who?
Ty Trang. They're...
No,
I know.
No,
I don't want it to happen. I don't want it to happen, Ty. I'm not trying to will this into existence.
Well, give me the scenario where the votes go on Ty.
Well, I think what would make sense is, you know, I think that there has to be assumption that, you know, this comes from the assumption that Ty has an idol, you know, that people know. And I think that, I don't know if that information is super common knowledge. I think that the beauties at least suspect it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, he mentions that super idol information really implicates him a bit.
Right. Did Nick share that information with
somebody,
Michelle?
You know, with Michelle, with Julia? Do those people know? It didn't seem like Julia knew.
I feel like I asked Nick in the exit interview, did Michelle and Julia know about the super idol? And he said that, no, Michelle couldn't really be trusted with information.
Yeah.
So I feel like that he didn't say anything. But now we don't, you know, now yeah. Sydney could be telling them.
Right. Well, does she know? Because didn't they say to keep that information from Sydney?
Yeah, it's really muddy in terms of who knows what right. and when and stuff like
so
that.
So let's just assume that somebody on that side does know. That's the way to play it out. So somebody on that side, Sydney knows. Sydney knows that Ty has an idol. Wouldn't it make sense to get rid of Ty? If you're trying to break up the threat of that super idol and make sure that super idol doesn't go, especially when Jason and Scott think that they are prime targets right now, don't you cut Ty? Don't you cut Ty out of the mix when he has no idea that an idol play is coming or that a vote is coming his way, that he would just be able to be voted out in that moment? Is Jason going to save him with the idol in that moment?
So if we're in the group of six,
yeah.
which are the five women plus Joe, would they vote to take out Ty? I mean, well, if Michelle and Julia don't feel like that they are close with Ty,
right.
if they feel like, okay, beauty is done, let's just get rid of him. Would that be the better move, or is that the half measure, and should you go after Jason?
Well, if you go after Jason...
Sydney knows Jason has the idol.
Sure, but Jason and Scott are on high alert, is what I'm saying. Those two people have every reason to believe that they could be voted out next, and Jason would be smart, probably next week, to play an idol unless things, you know, kind of group back together. If Sydney says, like, hey, I still want to play with you, that was just a for now.
Well, at that point, are you begging for the super idol to be used? Because right. if you put the votes on Ty, would it be smart for him to use his half of the idol to save Ty at that point?
Right.
And I feel like that he's in a very similar situation to what Malcolm was in during the Hold Up Bro.
Sure.
The Fill Up Tribal Council, which came right after that, where Malcolm was in possession of, I believe, who was it? Like, Reynold had the immunity necklace and he had access to two idols.
Right.
This is basically Jason in control. He could use an idol on Eddie and an idol on himself if he's Malcolm, or he could just let, you know, Eddie go out of the game at that point and play an idol for himself.
Right. Well, I think that if you were to lead Jason to believe that him and Scott are the people on the chopping block, that it would make a lot of sense for Kyle Jason to play an idol on himself before the votes are read.
Mm-hmm.
At which point that idol is now out of play and Ty's idol would go out of the game with him.
So you're basically telling them that, hey, we're splitting the votes on Jason and Scott tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's a lot of intrigue here.
Just a thought.
But at that point then, if we see one of the idols used and the other one go out of the game in Ty's pocket for whatever reason, or let's say that they both play their idols, I mean, is the threat of the super idol just done for the season? Because at that point, if we got both idols played at a tribal council, do you think production would add two more idols into the mix so that a super idol could potentially be found?
I don't know. I mean, the fact that Neil's idol, as far as we know, hasn't been reintroduced
right.
leads me to believe that they would probably just toss one idol back into the game, but they also would really like to see that super idol played.
Well, that's why I said at the beginning of the season when we first started talking about the super idol was that I felt like you needed to really increase the circulation of idols into the game if you ever want to have this used, because I feel like there's so few times that two people are working together and they have information about both having an idol.
Right.
Unless you had a situation like a Jeremy last season where he has two idols, I think it's going to happen extremely rarely.
Yeah, I do think, you know, however it plays out, I feel like the threat of the super idol is going to be a huge part of what's coming next. You know, I think that now that that information is out there, Ty threw that out at Tribal Council. Now everybody knows at least the myth, the legend, the whispers that are being thrown around about this super idol. I feel like that's got to play a really big role in what's coming up. I think that that could be a really big part of this upcoming episode, that this threat of the super idol and how to disarm it has to be coming up. I think that that's just, you know, whether or not it's played or if it's played effectively, I feel like it's got to be a big part of the story next week.
So coming into the merge, I felt like that Debbie had a certainly not great episode 7, but in a lot of ways, I think it was a bounce back episode 8. The person who was complaining about her the most is probably Nick. He's out of the game. Neil, we saw him also in secret scenes talk about how he doesn't love Debbie. Mm-hmm. He had that conversation with Aubrey. So really the only person I think who's left out there who's complained in any meaningful way about Debbie is Aubrey, who seems to be, you know, they're backed into the same corner together. Is Debbie out of the woods?
You know, I said this last week. It's like you can't really tell. You can't really tell with Debbie. Like Debbie is the toughest person to call. To call Gleason this season. I think, every other week it seems like, and I bet if you went back, like every other episode would Debbie like oscillate between lunatic and mastermind. Like I would love to go back and chart that. I'm sure it's not every other week, but every couple of episodes, Debbie completely changes just as quickly as the lower third herself. Like, she's just a chameleon. And I think that based on the Merge episode, she really did look like she was just way too aggressive and people were not responding well to it. But this week, you get the sense that a big part of why Sydney did what she did is because she wants to play with Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she loves Debbie. She wants to hang out with Debbie. So I do think that this was a bounce back week for Debbie. But next week could just as easily be, you know, crashing into an iceberg again.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Now, one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past, certainly in the evolution of strategy, is the idea of players that are better playing from ahead and players that are better playing from behind.
Yeah.
Debbie, where we saw her going into the Merge, said, okay, everybody's playing defense around here. I'm going to play offense. And we saw she was bad. It did not look good.
Yeah.
Now here's Debbie, clearly realizes that I'm on the outs here. Debbie is going back to playing defense. And I think that Debbie, when she's in this underdog role, I think that that really suits her. I think she plays really well when she's playing from behind in the game of Survivor. And I'm sure that we could really have some fun going through this if we wanted to, of talking about which Survivors are better playing from the front and playing from behind.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, Boston Rob comes to mind, where in the seasons where he has had control, I think that that's where he plays best. In the seasons where he is sort of not controlling things, that's where he sort of does not play nearly as well as he does when he's playing with a chip lead, so to speak.
Right.
But Debbie, I think, is one of these rare people who might play better when she's losing.
And I think, you know, when you compare her to, you know, who she herself compares herself to, like if you're looking at Coach, isn't Coach a more fun player when he is not fully in control? I mean, just look at his 3-season arc of Token Cheens, Heroes versus Villains, and South Pacific. In Token Cheens, he is in control for a while, and he's a great villain in that regard. But then when he starts to lose control, or when he thinks that he's in control, but clearly he's not, because we know that JT and Steven are really, they've got that bull by the horns. Coach is a fun guy to watch squirm and, you know, puff up his chest and stuff like that. In Heroes Villains, when he is, you know, acting like a craven, you know, when he is, you know, capitulating to Russell Hantz and not doing the right thing for Boston Rob, that's an entertaining character as well. And I think that the criticism of Coach in South Pacific is he goes out there and plays like a fairly dominant game. You know, he's the leader of this alliance. Yeah, he's taking bullets for Sophie, but it's not really, for a lot of people, a fun look. And I think with Debbie, you know, the big difference for me between Debbie and Coach, and I guess maybe it's a little more Token Cheens like, is that even when Debbie is out in front, when she is playing these, when she's making these aggressive plays, when she's playing really offensively, she's so fun to watch. But when she's playing from behind, she's also such a fun character. And I think that that's the great thing about Debbie, that Debbie is such an unusual, unique person in Survivor history. You know, I think that she really stands out, and it's fun to watch her play really well, but it's equally fun to watch her play really poorly, which is why I'm just glad that she's been such a pendulum just swinging back and forth.
And speaking to that, now Debbie, where she was in the minority last week, now she votes in the majority. And now we come into a week where, going into episode 9, she's in a pretty good spot in the game.
Yeah.
So I wonder if we're going to start to see Debbie tell Jason and Scott, hey, look, you guys blew it.
Uh-huh.
Last night for you, it must have been a
total blindside.
And so deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough.
Yeah. In your face.
In your face.
In your frontal lobes.
Right. So I wonder if we're going to start to see bad Debbie, which, as you pointed out, is still fun Debbie.
Fun Debbie. Great Debbie.
Will we get bad Debbie this week?
Yeah, I think that that's totally possible. You can absolutely see that scenario. And that would be probably the best thing for Jason and Scott, potentially. You know, like, if now they can have like an obvious target, if they can go to people being like, Debbie is ridiculous. You really want to play with Debbie. Like, you could see that. You could see that being a turnoff for Michelle and Julia. You could see how that situation arises where now things turn against Debbie again. I feel like it's hard to see Sydney turning her back on Debbie. They really seem to be connected. But I think if Debbie puffs her chest up and is really saying, you know, ridiculous things, there is an expiration date on that, you would think. Unless it just makes her the perfect person to take to the end, which is, in my opinion, best case scenario, because I want Debbie a final tribal council.
Right. What about the forgotten man, Joe?
The forgotten man, Joe. I know, you know, Joe is just really not there. And like, the most that they're saying about Joe is like, he can't hear us. And I know, again, exit interview is not canon, but a piece of that story that Nick told is that, you know, the vote ended up being on me and not switching over to Jason, because if we were to, you know, switch that vote, Joe isn't aware of the vote. He wouldn't vote that way. Not a great look for Joe.
Yeah, but I think that story might be a bit apocryphal.
Sure.
I don't know if that's necessarily
apostleful?
The case. Well, because I said that to Nick, because he said that same thing to me, and I had said to him, like, Joe wouldn't remember who to vote for. She said, well, that's what Debbie said the reason was. Yeah, because she was voting out Nick, you know? So she might have said, oh, no, we can't do that. We can't do that because Joe won't remember.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, even Tarzan himself with the nominal aphasia, how much of that was sort of, but that's Tarzan himself saying. So I kind of give Joe more credit, but I just kind of feel like that in terms of, you know, playing ball and, like, you know, giving, you know, interesting sound bites and stuff like that. I feel like that Joe's like, I'm good.
He's good. You know, I like his confessionals. I like when he speaks. He's not saying anything that's, like, you know, leaving you, you know, with your gut busted.
But I feel like that Joe might be like a, you know, a cat with production, where it's like when he wants to come out and he wants to talk, he'll talk to you. But if he doesn't feel like it, he's like, I'm going to go take a nap.
And just to clarify, not a cat with a K.
No. Like a feline. Yes.
Yes. Like an indoors cat. I think that that's funny. I think that the Tarzan comparison is an interesting thing to talk about. You just briefly mentioned Tarzan. And let's say we are seeing this situation where the women are banded together and now some sort of one-worlding is about to happen.
He's the Tarzan.
Is Joe the Tarzan?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so it goes down to, we easily could see a scenario where you have either way, I don't know who you want to cast as the other cat, cat second definition, and Alicia sort of like are going to, like, if Joe's saying, like, hey, you two, you know, Michelle and Julia, vote with me. Mm-hmm. Let's vote against them. You know,
it's I don't see any sort of move like that, but I think that, you know, Joe, I could see why Joe would think that this is a good thing and would be willing to ride it down for a while if he has real, you know, if he has real strong confidence in Debbie and Aubrey, you know, two people that he's been close with in the game. Like, I could see why he would think that he would be able to tag along with this for a while.
And that was really the case with Alicia and Cha-Cha, because they were with him at the new Monono tribe.
Yes.
And so that there was at least, if he had the nominal aphasia, not so much with them. And so he was trying to stick with them. And it was Kim saying, like, oh, no, he's playing you. Like,
yeah.
What? Oh, my God.
Yeah, maybe the game is afoot for Joe Del Campo. Yeah. You know, it's an underrated game. I would love to see him with that handlebar mustache.
Yeah, that would be a good look for him.
That'd be a really good look for him. Loving the beard. Loving the beard on Joe Del Campo. Let me put that out there on the record.
Yeah.
Starting to look real good. Island hot.
Island hot. Not cute?
No, hot.
Hot.
Island hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sizzling.
There you go.
What did you think about the return of Survivor Pizza?
I think I saw that Jason said on Twitter how bad it was.
Yeah, it seems to be. Didn't look great.
Did not look great.
Didn't look great. Yeah. That's a great reward to have, like, all of those, like, chicken drumsticks. That seems solid.
That seems pretty good.
Yeah. It was good.
Tyson had been saying that, no, the food is better on Survivor these days. Yeah. But I don't know. That looked like a step in the wrong direction.
Jason would say that it tastes like armpit anus.
Yeah.
Nice and simple. We do our thug dizzle.
Yeah.
That pizza was not Thug Dizzle.
It was not a Thug Dizzle pizza.
No, it was bad. It was bad. So let's say that Sydney and Aubrey and Debbie and all of these people, Michelle and Julia, let's say that they hold, that they stay.
Yeah. Not hollow vote this week.
What are we calling them? Like, what is their name? Like, do we have a name for this alliance?
What were they? They're five plus Joe.
Five plus
Joe's Angels.
Joe's Angels? Is that where we're going?
Yes.
Yeah. Joe's Angels. I like that. I feel like Aubrey made a decent suggestion at Tribal Council this past week.
Yeah, what did she say?
She called herself Cochran's Dream Girl.
Yes, because she's running all the scenarios.
She's running all the scenarios, and it would be very good. I like Cochran's Dream Girls.
Yeah.
I think that that would be good. In fact, there is a deleted scene that is about that very thing. Let's take a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Wiggle Room is proud to present the podcast debut of Cambodia's newest recording stars, Cochran's Dreams!
John Cochran has his own special dream, and his dream is about to come true. Go wrong's better than it may seem if you open your heart to season 32. Cochran's Dream Girls, John will make you happy, yeah. With Cochran's Dream Girls, Aubrey has shampoos hair. Cochran's Dream Girls, our brains and our hearts are for you, yeah, yeah, and we will make the final three.
shout out.
Cockroach
if you're John after John, I'll vote you out. Aubrey, Debbie, Sydney, Michelle, Julia, and Wanda are Cochrane's Dream Girls crew.
Cochrane's Dream Girls.
I'm sorry. I'm not proud of that one.
Tapped out.
Not proud of that one. Not proud of that one. Bad setup. Bad setup. Shut up, Tim wins the Dream Girls competition this week for sure. I just had to let
and
it
I'm
out.
Like,
oh, I'm sorry. Woo.
Yeah.
Too much, that? Too far.
Was that submitted by Jennifer Lanzetti Hudson?
You know, I do have it off the record here that that was in the mix before Jenny from the Block was settled on some Jennifer Lanzetti Hudson.
Yeah.
Woo. Sorry, guys. Real sorry about that. Sometimes I bring it, sometimes I don't. What are you going to do? You keep it real, though.
We kept it real.
Keep
we
it hunched.
Kept it real. All right. Well, Josh, it was so nice to have you here in person in my room, in your room.
Yeah, I brought my room to yours, so it's our room.
Okay.
Yeah.
Our room. Josh, what's the hashtag today?
Did you write anything down? Any good candidates?
We have either Cal Gleason.
That's good.
Cal Gleason.
Cal Gleason.
Bad Debbie.
Bad Debbie. Illback.
Illback?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah, we could.
It's your call.
Let's suffer from a case of Illback.
Illback.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Ka-ching. Okay. Is that the new bell?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. That one still exists. Is the alternate universe bell still in
play? Not in here. It's not in here.
All right. Well,
retire it.
Okay.
All right.
Bring that back in a couple of years.
All right. Josh Wigler has some business still to do here in California, but you will be returning to New York?
Yeah.
Back on the East Coast soon?
I will be back on the East Coast. Yeah, I'm out here for Game of Thrones coverage. Fun stuff. Game of Thrones premiere happening this week. As you're listening to this, it already happened. Rob, you were there with me.
Yes, very excited.
Do you think we enjoyed it?
I hope so.
I hope so, too. But yeah, then after that, I'll be flying back to New York. I will be like right up against it to make it to Live Know-It-Alls. But I will at the very least, if I'm not at Live Know-It-Alls, the actual event, I will be the mayor of the after party.
After party. You'll be the first one there?
I'll be the first
the call
one there.
Of the after party?
Yeah, so it's one or the other. Either I'll be like a really late entry to the Live Know-It-Alls because my flight is really close, landing right before it. Or I will be the mayor of the after party. I'll just be there to greet you guys as you come in. Anyone who's there.
Right. So, all right. So look for Josh Wigler there. Of course, you can follow Josh Wigler on Twitter at Round Howard. By the way, if you're not following Josh Wigler for the Survivor coverage, hope you'll at least do it for the Game of Thrones coverage because Josh is churning out Game of Thrones articles left and right for The Hollywood Reporter.
Like it's my job.
Yeah. Like it's his job.
Yeah. Like it's almost like it was my job.
When he's not making song parodies, he is reporting about a very serious show for a serious publication.
It sucks. I hate that I revealed that I am the one who does some of these. I know. Like I was really holding on to that secret for a long time. But yeah.
Of course, also Josh does his weekly exit interview on Parade.com and is the co-author of the legendary audiobook, The Evolution of Strategy.
It's a long book.
It's a long book.
It's a long book.
Yeah. Yes, I think it did end up being longer than the Game of Thrones audiobooks as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think for the next round, for the re-release of The Evolution of Strategy, we could have Roy Dotrice narrating it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that
his impressions are pretty good.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, but the Evolution of Strategy was actually written by George R.R. Denise Martin.
I'm glad you went there instead of George R. Martin Piombo. That was another option.
I was going to go with George R. Artist Martin.
Not even George R. C. Martin? We've been here too long. We've been here too long. A lot happened here today that you guys have not heard yet.
Okay. All right. Oh, so, Evolution Strategy, Chapter 1, All About Borneo, is available for free.
Yeah. Hey, with all that Game of Thrones talk, you know, it is coming back pretty soon.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not next week, but fairly soon, maybe some Survivor Game of Thrones talk.
Oh, yeah.
I think we could do that.
Yeah, I think we'll do some crossover
A Riverland
podcasting.
Sequel?
We'll see.
All right.
We'll see what happens.
Just put that in the universe, see if that
all
happens.
Right. Evolution of Strategy is available at evolutionofstrategy.com. All of the Game of Thrones coverage is over on postshowrecaps.com. Of course, David Bloomberg is coming up next. That'll be the next podcast you hear from us because he has a lot to say about it. He's been chatting these survivors up on Twitter.
I love it. Yeah, the unofficial exit interviews from David Bloomberg on Twitter are must read. He is a must follow on Twitter.
Yes. And so that's coming up here on the podcast on Tuesday. And then, of course, no live know-it-alls on the internet for Wednesday night, but we will have the show that we're recording in person up very soon thereafter. Josh Wigler, always a treat.
Always a treat with you. Do you feel any pressure for this live Know-It-Alls coming up because you just completed your very best episode of Know-It-Alls ever this past week with a very, like, super crazy, hyped up painkiller Stephen Fishback, who might be the best character that's ever appeared on your body.
Yeah, we'll be pushing painkillers on Stephen before the show like it's an NFL locker room. Like,
unbelievable.
All right, we got to get you out there, Stephen. Take some of these. Let's go.
When he found out that it was the 100th Know-It-Alls episode, and he then decided to say, we should get a bottle of wine. If you've only listened to the podcast but haven't watched the YouTube version, you really need to fix that because Steven is such a gem there. It's really great.
All right. Well, we are doing it live in person this Wednesday night. Very much looking forward to that and much, much more. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robswebsite.com/iTunes or search for RHAP in your favorite podcatcher. Looking forward to reading your comments. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Used to blog a lot at RHAP. Never figured out the art of tweeting. Started on a tripartite train and ended covered in a storm called Sydney. And this is how you blindside me. This is how you blindside me out of the freaking game. Take me to tribal council and just write down my name. It's not like me to say sorry. I'm the author of my own story. Michelle, you're mistaken. Don't worry, bro, I'll just mansplain it. Yeah, I'm co-wrong. The beatdowns were bad enough to make you envy Joe Dowdle. My wound was a swollen head, so big I got my